All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of O365A. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the top five common usability questions when it comes to Microsoft Teams and some of the challenges and how to get around them and just some advice from our perspective. So I'm going to pass it on to Michael to talk about federation.
Yeah, so Teams External Access, which is from the Skype for Business world, federation, and I'll keep calling it federation. For this little section. But in Teams, when you start a new chat and you type in an external contact, this is an external contact's address, you'll get a drop down. Make sure you click on that search for contact externally, because that contact might have, it might be a guest account as well in your tenant. So make sure when you do type that external account, you hit that drop down that says, search externally. Now, the number one question I get asked from external contacts is why I show up as a Skype for Business icon and, text saying that, some of the features are limited outside your organization, even though we're both using Teams. And that's because Federation currently uses the Skype for Business Online infrastructure. So it is limited to basic chat, one-to-one calling and video. You would also need to schedule a meeting to have more than two people in that conversation, or if you want to do a desktop share. Now, Microsoft is rolling out native Teams Federation in July, which should allow for a richer conversation. So similar to two Teams users that are within the same tenant. But your Teams account must be in Teams only mode. And I've already started seeing some of the native Teams features, like being on a federated call and being able to do or access that share tray and do desktop or application sharing. Now, note that Federation doesn't include Skype consumer accounts at this time, but on user voice, where you would go and provide feedback to Microsoft, the Microsoft product group has marked the request for Skype consumer Federation as planned. So hopefully we see that in the near future. But yeah, I'll pass it over to Hab to talk about meetings.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. So from a meeting perspective, when I'm working with my clients and we're going through the whole motion and process of what happens when I start moving my users over from Skype for Business to Teams, what happens to my existing meetings? If I'm not on Teams, how do I join Skype for Business meetings, et cetera, right? So essentially, if when you're moving from Skype for Business to Teams, if you're doing on an individual user perspective, you do have the option to kick off the meeting migration service on the user itself. There's the option that says move my meetings. If you're planning to do it via an org-wide move, so just basically forklifting everybody from Skype for Business to Teams, then you would have to kick off the meeting migration service via PowerShell for all of your users to enable the meeting migration service to automatically convert their existing Skype for Business meetings to Teams and send those invitations out, right? So what happens if I'm on Teams and another user is on Skype for Business and they send me a meeting invitation? So I always recommend that you don't uninstall the full Skype for Business client. I feel that you get a richer experience when joining Skype for Business meetings, even though the client becomes in a limited functionality mode. But joining that Skype for Business meeting, you're already used to the client. You know where all of the buttons are, the devices, changes, etc., as opposed to learning the new Skype for Business web app, where there are some limitations to it and then also where you're clicking to modify certain things. So those are some of the questions that I get asked. And then also from an external user perspective, are external users able to access my Teams meetings? The answer is yes. And if they don't have the Teams client, then they can just join via their web browser, as is supported in Edge and Chrome and Firefox. It is limited to, I believe, voice right now, but I'm not sure if they're going to be expanding on that. But for sure, Edge and Chrome and even the new Edge Chromium as well. So I'm going to pass it on to Dino to talk about guest access.
Cool. Thanks, Hab. So just a quick recap. If you recall, guest access is what allows teams in your organization to collaborate with people outside your actual organization. So it's individuals that you're granting access to that you want them to have access in, into specific teams and channels. So, and anyone, you can basically invite anyone with a business or consumer email account like Outlook or Gmail, Hotmail, that type of thing. And then they can participate in your teams with full access to chats, meetings, and files. Just quickly, you know, pretty much every flavor of licensing is covered, has guest access to it. You can have up to 5 guests licensed per user on your tenant. And you can see more about this online. There's quite an in-depth discussion about licensing. So the first question that we typically always get is, how do we grant access to a team for an external user to my company? And that's basically, it's a tenant-wide setting that's in Teams, and it's turned off by default. And so in the Teams admin center, you would find the guest access and just toggle the switch on. And that would basically turn it on. There may be some other Azure settings that you might have to turn on, but typically a brand new tenant would have just the one thing you would have to do is just enable the guest access in the Teams admin center. The second thing, you know, we get a lot of questions about is like, what's like guest access versus federation, as Mike talked about previously. So guest access is, think of guest access as access to an individual, and federation is or external access is access to an entire external organization. But there's still some slight differences between them. So federation, again, is what's going to allow you to do one-to-one chat, calling, and video with other Teams users outside your organization. But if you're looking just to limit the access into the channels or teams and that type of collaborative experience, then that's what guest access is for. So you can't grant somebody federate, you can't grant an org federation and expect them to be able to have access into teams and channels just at this point. That's where guest access comes in. Secondly, like what is guest access doing under the covers? So what actually happens is it creates an actual Azure AD account for each of the guests that you provision. So if you fire up Azure AD, or you even look into your admin portal and you look under users, you'll start to see all these new user objects with an EXT in them, in capital EXT, and that represents the guest object for everybody that you're giving guest access to. So it's kind of neat to see that, and just shows you that they actually have to provision an account for that user to function. So once you've granted somebody guest access, like how do these companies actually access other teams' tenants? So what happens is, once you've gone through the process in your team, you say, I want to add this external user, that'll start this authorization process, and the external user will get an email and they'll with a link to click on, which will spin up the process to create their account in your tenant. Once that happens and everything goes as it should, that user is going to start to see on the top right of their client, beside their client icon or person icon or photo, if they have one, just beside to the left of that, you'll start to see the list of tenants that they'll have access to. So if it's Acme Corp, all of a sudden in the drop down beside their person icon, they'll see Acme Corp listed there. They can just drop down, select that tenant, and then they'll actually kick off the process to sign into the tenant. So you'll see teams kind of spinning around, you'll see a couple faces and stuff on the screen while it's signing you in. You may be asked to enter your own credentials again, and then you'll have access into that tenant. You can start to see the teams and channels that you've been provisioned access to. Lastly, in terms of the feature limitations as a guest, like, you know, so we get asked, like, what don't I get to do as a guest? And just, you know, in no particular order, there's a bunch of things, and there's a complete list online, but I'll go through a few of them. So you won't have access to OneDrive for business. The people search outside of Teams won't be available. the calendar, scheduling meetings or meetings details, you won't have access to do any of that stuff when you're in the guest tenant. Making PSTN calls, organizational charts, creating or revising a team, browsing for teams, uploading files or person-to-person chat, to a person-to-person chat, so you can't do that. You can still search and find users within guest access if you know the full email address of the person, and there's some restrictions you can place on that in terms of scoping directory searches. But I'd encourage you to have a look at the complete list just to see what those limitations are. So on that, I'm going to pass it over to Kurt, and he's going to talk about interop.
Yeah, thanks, Dino. So interop with Skype for Business and Teams, that usually generates a lot of questions. First of all, let's just define interop. That's looking at the experience of how messages, chat messages and voice messages or voice calls flow between the two clients, a Teams user and a Skype for Business user. That experience is governed by something called an upgrade mode, and each user has an upgrade mode. The default, if nothing's done, is something called Islands mode. So if you have an enterprise and some users are using Teams and some using Skype for Business, if nothing's been done, they are in Islands mode. And one of the first set of questions that arise is questions and challenges around missed calls and missed IMs. And why that experience can happen is in Islands mode, that mode relies on every user running both clients, both the Teams client and the Skype for Business client. And which client a message or a call goes to depends on the client that the originating user used. So if Habib, for example, is using the Skype for Business client and he tries to send me a message and I'm running the Teams client, I'm not going to get that message because it's expecting me to be running the Skype for Business client to get that message. Likewise, if Habib's trying to contact me on Teams, he needs to use the Teams client to originate that chat message. So a lot of confusion and questions can come out of that scenario. And the best advice there is, if you are in Islands mode, use both clients. That will ensure that if the people you communicate with are using both clients, you won't miss any communication. You'll have the best experience. Likewise, once a user's been upgraded to Teams only mode, and they're trying to communicate, interop with someone on Skype for Business, there's a few feature restrictions. For example, there's no file sharing and no screen sharing. So that can often be a bit of a surprise because people are so used to just sharing screens and sharing files. So know that limitation exists. Another scenario which can cause some confusion is if I'm upgraded to Teams only, and another user has upgraded to Teams only recently, sometimes there can be a bit of a latency, sometimes days, for the policies to replicate to all users. And if there's too much of a latency, what can happen is if I'm on Teams only, I'm communicating or trying to communicate with someone who's just recently upgraded, but his or her policy hasn't fully replicated yet, I may get a message in Teams saying that this user is switched to Skype for Business and the administrator's disabled chat for this user, which isn't the case. It's just either I don't have the policy or something hasn't replicated in the back end to update that. So the best advice there is to have both users restart the client. And as long as about 48 hours have passed, that usually does the trick. There are some circumstances where that might not be the case. I think Microsoft is very aware of the issue, and they're looking at how to improve it. So stay tuned for some improvements there. But those are some of the common questions involving interop with Skype for Business and Teams. So I think the other area we want to cover is questions around mobile. And Habib, I think you had a good tip for mobile usability.
Yeah. So, I mean, from a mobile perspective, first thing I want to call out is it's awesome. I think we're all in agreement that it's a great client. So there's a couple of little tidbits from a help better your experience. One, obviously, when you're moved over to Teams, or even if you're in the Islands mode and stuff like that, is just keep Skype for Business client on your mobile device, because if you're joining Skype for Business meetings from the Teams app, it'll flip you over into the Skype for Business app and you join the Skype for Business meetings from there. And then the other one from a battery-like perspective was it's been out for quite a while now, but they provide the ability to put you into a dark mode, which changes the backlit display of your mobile device from white to a dark background interface. So that definitely helps out from a battery life perspective. So I'm gonna pass it on to Michael next. Yeah.
Yeah, one of my favorite features on the Teams mobile client that we didn't have in Skype for Business was the companion mode. So when I join a meeting from my desktop or my laptop, I look down at my mobile client and it's kind of offering to also join. And when you do that, it can, join into the meeting. You'll have the mic muted so you don't get any of that howling. But now I can use my phone as like presenter controls. I have the ability to, get up and go and then just consume the audio from the device and the full meeting experience. And that's kind of one of the big features I like from that, not having to look at my calendar, find the meeting, join, and then I'm already in the meeting and all that howling going on, everyone's trying to mute. But yeah, it's nice, single click. Now you're on your device, walk out, keep going, consume your content.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like the pinch to zoom in a meeting. Like, you can actually just, whatever content's being displayed, you can literally pinch it and zoom in, and the rendering of it is quite good. You can start to make stuff out on a whiteboard or whatever. Like, if you need to just, often you're on a phone, it's a bit small, you want to make something out, so you can just simply pinch to zoom. So that's a really nice addition.
Yeah, one of my favorites is just all the performance improvements that they've been doing over the last year on the mobile client. And I guess the tip there is make sure you update your mobile client, because they are continually improving the performance. Specifically, the performance, I know for myself, switching tenants is really, really fast. So any tenant you've logged into, your profile is there to switch, and the switching process is very,
it's super fast.
Yeah.
And I think I would say also, like, I would never have said this in Skype for Business. Like, I don't think I kind of tolerated the Skype for Business mobile client. It was there and you used it when you had to. I actually enjoy using the mobile client in Teams. And I, for a while, when Teams first came out, I was actually using it more than the desktop. And I continue, I think I probably use it as much as the desktop client, like, which, speaks volumes to the quality of the product.
No, I totally agree. All right. Well, thanks for the great discussion, guys. I think some really good little tips of information for our listeners here. Thanks, everybody, for listening in, and hopefully we'll catch you on our next episode.
Right on.
See you later.
See you. Bye.